So James Hudson is my guest here today on the podcast, and this is going to be quite an interesting one and very pertinent, I think, in terms of timing. We're going to be talking about compassionate leadership. For a lot of people, I think those two words are not necessarily great bedfellows. We are going to explore whether you can be compassionate and a successful leader. And I'm guessing really, James, what we're going to do here is talk about, you know, leadership in all its broadest senses, not necessarily just senior management in large corporates, but this is about leading in life, isn't it? I mean, this kind of reads across into personal life. If you're in a community group or you've got a special interest that you have and you've got a team, or at any kind of level and any walk of life, this whole kind of compassionate leadership thing should resonate, shouldn't it?
100%, Neil. And I'm a huge believer that leadership is not a title. In fact, we choose to lead, and any single one of us can lead in any given situation. It's within all of us and a responsibility for all of us to take accountability for who we are, for our actions, and to lead in all kinds and all manners of different ways. So I think often we think leadership is just this foreign concept. It's this person up at the top, whereas actually each and every single one of us are leading in different ways every single day of our lives. And it's about how we choose in those moments to be our best versions of ourselves, really, and lead ourselves first and foremost. And also, Neil, thank you so much for the invite to the podcast this morning. Really, really great to be here with you.
I am really pleased that you could make it, because I know obviously you have everybody listening to this, you have to understand James's diary is like nothing else. James is a very, very in demand, very, very busy person. So, you're doing work and you're kind of helping organizations of, various sizes and in lots of different sectors to kind of, I guess, pick their way through this stuff. I mean, it really is a hot topic, isn't it? I know a lot of the work that you do is about, and I guess we could call it change management, where you're kind of helping people see the kind of the before and after and actually helping them transition from state A to state B, or from situation one to situation two. It feels like this world at the moment is going through change like it's never known before. I mean, in all the years that you've been doing this, I mean, is this almost like the perfect storm for the kind of things that you do?
I think change and transformation is definitely a huge topic at the moment. I think, change is happening all the time, and we're always changing. But I think the speed at which change is required of people has increased massively, particularly with things like the pandemic that's happened. Even before that, if you're UK based, we had things like Brexit. All these kind of things have caused, you could call it a perfect storm. You could also call it a perfect opportunity, because I believe with every single change comes opportunities. I think that the rate at which change is happening, the rate at which technology is changing and opening doors for us is immense. And so change and transformation is certainly an exciting place to be right now. But with that change and transformation, my belief is that compassionate leadership becomes even more important. Because when people are going through change, we know that change forces people out of their comfort zones. It forces them out of what they currently know. And so what we have to do is create a space where they feel safe, a space where they can trust people and trust that change and trust that process. And so more and more, as people are forced out of their comfort zones to have to deal with new things and new experiences, they need that sort of safe hand, if you like, that arm around their shoulder that compassionate leadership brings, to say, listen, it's okay, it's going to be all right. Let's just take it one step at a time and get through this situation. And I often see, again, I've worked in change and transformation all around the globe in huge, huge businesses. Some of these programs are affecting 250,000 members of staff. So they're not small programs that we're dealing with at all. But done well, it's about taking those people on a journey with you. It's about winning their hearts and minds first. It's about encouragement. It's about providing safety. Done badly, change and transformation is, we are doing this to you. you know, get on with it, lump it or leave kind of thing. And so I've seen change and transformation programs be really, really successful. I've also seen them fall flat on their face, where you've got leadership that are trying to force through something without actually, even when that something is fantastic, you know, it, unless you win someone's hearts and minds, they're not going to come with you. You know, you can be trying to sell them streets paved with gold, but if they're not convinced that that's where they need to go, they ain't going to go. And so it really often people go, oh, well, this is better for them. So, you know, surely they'll want to come along this journey with us. Unless you show them that it's better for them, unless you win them over, no, it's not going to happen. And that comes from compassionate leadership. That comes from really understanding people, understanding them, understanding what it's like for them. And as I say, putting that arm around their shoulder and helping them through that change journey.
Is there something almost sort of counterintuitive here? At the start of what you just described there, it was almost like, is it being sympathetic to their fear? Because I guess for a lot of people, change is as a fearful thing. It's, you know, obviously decisions always made, it's either through love or through change, through love or through fear. And if change is perceived by somebody who you are leading as a little bit fearful, the unknown doesn't resonate. For lots of people, you've used the word opportunity then. I think for me personally, and I'm sure for you as well, well, I know for you as well, it's kind of, it's exciting. But for a lot of people, it's not exciting, is it? It's kind of fearful. That unknown is stepping out of something that is, I mean, I guess there is no sort of, you know, surety in this world at all, really, but people perceive it that way. And so if they're fearful of the change, is compassionate leadership just kind of beginning to sort of evolve this definition? Is it about being sympathetic to the fear of others? Because if others are fearful, it's kind of, there is that resistance that comes from that, isn't there?
There is, absolutely. But it's about trying to understand why they're fearful. Because it comes back to understanding and showing empathy. So, we could very much use that word sympathy. If we look at the definition of compassion in the dictionary, the definition literally is to suffer with someone. That is what compassion means. And so, you know, if we think about empathy, sympathy, you know, we often talk about them as two conflicting things, you know, but actually there is that link between the two. So empathy is about understanding someone. Sympathy is almost feeling how they feel, trying to imagine how someone feels, put yourself in their shoes and literally go, actually, you know, whilst I'm not fearful of this change, I can see all the reasons why you might be fearful of this change. So let me help you through those reasons. Let me understand why you feel this fear and show you the reasons why there is nothing to be fearful of. And helping someone through, rather than just saying, don't be so absurd, just get on with it. Which again, often we think, you know, just get on with it. Come on, what are you worried about? But that is the essence of compassionate leadership. It is about that, actually, even though I don't, you know, fear or I don't worry or this isn't a concern of mine, I'm going to make it a concern of mine because it's affecting my team member, you know, the person I'm working with, my colleague, and I want to help that person. So as I say, the essence of compassionate leadership is to suffer with someone, to put yourself in their shoes, and to really understand them and understand what's driving that behavior.
I know that over the years, you and I both worked in some similar industries. Sort of the particular one where we kind of cut our teeth and grew up was telecoms, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess in that industry, if you were to use, I mean, maybe back in the day, particularly, I mean, it could still be prevalent now, but if you were to use the words empathy, sympathy, compassion, it would have been like, guys, get on with the job. What are you? So yeah. Real lightweight? Come on. And so there was almost like a big sort of, I guess you could call it autocratic, ego-fueled kind of essence of leadership back in the day. And I'm sure, you know, lots of it, industries, lots of organizations are still like that. Obviously, you know, L&D professionals trying to drag their organizations kicking and screaming into this much more compassionate world. But how do you deal with a leader who is, you know, quite resistant to that because one, they've always known it another way. They've always been, and let's use the word, the boss. Not sure where that one goes, but it was very much an old school style of management. We can't even call it leadership because you weren't leading anybody. You're basically telling them where to go. I mean, how do you cope with somebody like that? Because that surely is a very, very big journey, isn't it? To move from that kind of egocentric kind of way to something that is, you know, very, very much about the other person and spending the time and energy to really kind of understand where they're coming from rather than just tell them. How do you deal with that sort of person?
I agree with you 100%, Neil, and I agree with you 100% because that was me. So if I go back 26 years ago, when I first started in sales, and I worked in telecoms, cutthroat world, cutthroat, high pressure sales environment. I was that sales manager who would be, right, just do it, do or die. If you don't do it, I'm going to fire you. And I learned the hard way about how not to lead and how not to manage people. Every mistake you could possibly make, I made in my early days as a manager, including things like, you know, telling someone who had an illness that they were lazy and rubbish and that I was going to fire them. I ended up in every HR guidance meeting and in trouble so many times because I was that manager, and I had to come on that journey. And the only way, and again, I guess this comes back to what compassionate leadership is all about, is that, if you want someone to change, you know, you've got to win their hearts and minds. You've got to show them that actually what they're doing is not the right way. And for me, that didn't happen overnight, but it came over time of people saying, okay, James, what could you have done? Is there a better way you could have handled that situation? That clearly wasn't the outcome that you wanted to end up with. So what have we learned from this, James? What could we do differently? And I had to go on that journey myself. And no amount of people telling me, no, you're wrong, James. That's not how you lead people. And, oh, come on, James. You know, what are you doing? Would just build up a resistance in me to say, no, I'm the boss. You know, I'm the one in charge here. I've got to stamp my authority all over this. And whenever I say that, I have Cartman's voice in my head. You must respect my authority. Because that's literally what I was like as a boss in my early days. It was like, I'm the boss. I'm in charge here. You must respect me. And what I've learned over the years is that actually, in order to get someone's respect, you have to respect them first in the first place. And actually, if we respect other people, if we treat them with compassion, if we don't judge, then actually we get that in return and people will listen and people will take the time and they will respect what you say to them and they will go above and beyond for you. Whereas if you are the kind of manager who just tells people what to do, bosses people around, expects people to do it because you've told them to do it, actually people will, you know, it will get people's backs up and they will do the minimum for you, the very, very least they can get away with. Whereas if people respect you, if they sit there and go, actually, my manager genuinely cares and genuinely is trying to help me and understand me, they will always go the extra mile for you. They will go above and beyond your expectations and deliver outcomes for you that actually you didn't even think existed because they you just unlock all that creativity by creating that safe space in which they can operate and do their best work.
I had a flashback as you were just going through that description there of almost like the ideal, you know, alternative, should we say, to that horrendous manager. Yeah, you can just, you can picture them sort of red in the face, really kind of stressed, really anxious and almost fearful in their own sort of skin of kind of what actually is going to happen here. It's almost that kind of then, relays over onto the other person or the team, because there is no going back from that, really, is there? I saw in my mind's eye as you were describing that, probably the best leader that I ever worked for and with, but I would say actually worked for, because it was that kind of a relationship. You knew who was boss, but the way he did it, he was ex-military, and I always find that when it comes to leadership, the amount we can learn from the military, they just seem to really have nailed it in many, many ways. And a lot of the things that he used to do was, it was time. He would give you the time. You didn't get much time, but the time that you had with him, the focus, it was laser precision. It was all about you. So you might have only got 2 minutes, literally. He would say, let's walk and talk. And it was that kind of old cliche that you see in all the American movies, walk and talk, and you're going through the office and stuff. But in those 2 minutes, even though you were walking and talking, you knew you had his undivided attention. So, compassionate leadership doesn't have to necessarily be all about kind of tree hugging and everyone relaxes and chills and, this kind of thing. It is just about those moments, isn't it? Those moments of attention. And as you say, really kind of getting to the understanding of the other person. So it doesn't have to be something that takes, oh, well, I haven't got the time for that. This is going to take me hours to do this thing. Am I kind of reading this right? Because I've only really got one example of where this has been really, really good. You've seen others, that's true.
100%, but absolutely, that is a great example of compassionate leadership, because actually when you needed him, he gave you his complete undivided attention, and we all see it play out in offices all around the world where, you'll have a member of staff go to their manager and they'll say, they'll obviously need something. And the manager's there furiously typing away on their computer and they'll be doing the whole, I am listening. Just carry on. And you know that your manager's not listening to you. You know they're not paying attention to anything you're saying. And yet they do it. So actually a good manager goes, I'll just put that to one side and I'll either give you my laser focus for the time that you need it, or I will say to you, listen, I just need to get this email done. Give me 2 minutes and then you can have my undivided attention. And it's about making time for people. That again is a fundamental to compassionate leadership, is that people need time, people need attention. And again, it goes two ways. When you give someone your undivided time and attention, guess what? They give you their undivided time and attention in return. It's the thing about all of this compassionate leadership stuff is it's not rocket science. It really is just genuine human relationships. But I think, as you say, it's so alien to some people because we're told from management, it's about being powerful. It's about asserting your authority. Compassion is weakness. You must show your strength. Whereas the complete opposite is true. Compassion is strength. If in a moment where you have every right to be angry at someone, to say, what on earth are you doing? You actually just turn around and say, just explain to me why. Talk to me about what's happened. I need to understand what's caused this situation. And you give people that space and you don't judge them. That is strength, rather than turning around and acting out on our reactionary emotions in that moment. So strength is actually taking the time to understand and stop that cycle of sort of anger and all that kind of stuff that we see in workplaces.
Did you notice, people, what James did there? Did you notice the difference in his tone of voice when he was showing composure? I'm going to use that word, composure, because I think that was quite a profound little moment in this conversation. The way that you sort of changed the intonation of your voice there as you were questioning the person. You gave them the space, but you brought the tone down. You sounded more relaxed. It was more composed from your perspective. And so I'm guessing this kind of reciprocity, I always struggle saying that word, that reciprocity from the other person where they reciprocate back. It's like, oh, okay, I'm in a safe space. So I can now actually convey back to you, James, kind of actually what happened. I didn't really want to say it, but you've relaxed me because of your body language, because of your tone of voice. So there is this kind of mirror effect thing going on, isn't there? You do, as you said earlier, you know, you get what you give. If you go in all guns blazing, you're going to get all guns blazing back at you. But if you do that composure like you just did there, I mean, even I kind of felt that. It was like, oh, this is a nice space to live in.
Completely unintended, Neil. Completely unintended. But that is exactly what
you're doing this without even realizing it. But that's it, isn't it? But it is this kind of mirror effect, isn't it, really? That if somebody wants something, if you play that role, you play that part, and you do it in such a way as you want it returned, it just happens, doesn't it? We're funny things as human beings, aren't we?
And you know, before people kind of go, which I know people will say, well, you know, what's the science behind this, James, and all this kind of stuff? This is just mumbo jumbo, airy fairy stuff. And you know, if you want to look into this, there is an awful lot of science behind it as well, Neil, which is again excites me. So there's something called polyvagal theory, which again I'm still getting my head around, because I'll be honest with you, I am not the highest detail person out there. But I have read some of the reports on it and things like that. Psychologists use it a lot, counselors use it a lot, but polyvagal theory basically states that when we feel safe, we actually do our best work. We have freedom to express ourselves, we have freedom to be creative, we have freedom to perform, and that all comes from a safe space. So it's a polyvagal theory. Check it out, guys, if you want to look at the science behind all this stuff. But it's been proven with science that actually when we create safe spaces for people, they actually perform at their best. And that's all compassionate leadership is just about actually how can I make this safe for the individual? How can I make them feel reassured and make them feel safe? I can't think of a better word to use, just safe in this space, in order for them to, you know, talk about how they're feeling, what's going on, and how to do their best. Now, a moment ago, Neil, we were talking about telecoms, and you know, we both know telecoms from sort of, as I say, mine goes back 26 years ago, you know, in the mid 90s, where it was cutthroat and, you know, sell or die kind of environments and stuff like that. I recently worked on a huge change and transformation program with another major telecoms company. I won't mention names, but I will say that they are, you know, probably one of the biggest players in the world. A brand that everyone knows in every major country, around the world. And they are actually exploring this stuff as well. And they are bringing in the whole, let's talk about how we feel into their workplace. But they do it in a really, really clever way. Because again, most people, we're not at that stage yet where we feel comfortable to say, oh, boss, you know, I'm feeling a little bit depressed today, or I'm, you know, we find it hard to put labels, if you like, on our emotions, or to express, you know, how we feel from a mental health point of view. And so this particular company use a language, it's actually quite clever. They call it playing from a 10. And all they do is basically just give themselves a number between 1 and 10 about how they're feeling that day. And so therefore, we don't have to put labels or, you know, mental health or anything like that around it. We simply have to say, do you know what, today I'm feeling like a 2. You know, and then the team just come around them and say, hey, okay, if you're feeling like a 2, what can we do? You know, is there anything we can do? Can we help you at all? You know, and the idea is not to have everyone every single day playing at a 10, because that's not possible. You know, we all have stuff going on in our lives. You know, we all have bad days at work. We all have those days where we have customers screaming at us. It's not going to be a great day. But if I'm feeling like it's a 2, if I can at least get up to a 5 or a 6 by the end of the day, then that's been a successful day. And I'm going to have better conversations, better outcomes that day than if I'd stayed at a 1 or a 2 all day. then, you know, that. So, you know, there are ways of doing this, is what I'm trying to say, where we don't have to kind of put labels on things and sort of have these, you know, you don't have to become an amateur psychologist to be a compassionate leader. You know, you can find a language that works for you and works for your team to be able to express this is not a good day. I need a little bit of help here. And then we can all come together and go, okay, what can we do? How can we get you a little bit further up that chain so that actually, you know, you're having a better day than you would have done without us helping you out. And as I say, that is in probably the world's biggest telecoms company that is still quite a cutthroat environment, still has to deliver. And yet the senior leadership within that organization are recognizing that actually mental health, well-being, making sure people are playing at their best and the best that they can give on that day is really, really important to the outcomes of the organization and the success of the organization.
That's a lovely little take, isn't it? It's so profoundly simple, but in itself, it's just so easy to translate, isn't it? Nobody can get that wrong. If you know that, you know, one is low and 10 is high, I mean, everybody gets that. It's so simple, yet so effective. Do you feel that kind of the structures in those kinds of organizations support this compassionate leadership? Because if you have an organization that has what might be called a traditional kind of hierarchy, doesn't that just by its nature, I don't want to get sort of too heavily into, you know, company structures and things like that, but I'm just curious about, you know, forming a team. A lot of people at the moment are kind of, you know, pivoting their organization or their department or kind of recruiting in their teams and stuff. Does the old traditional model of, you know, boss at the top and workers below, does that still kind of support this idea of compassionate leadership? Can the two kind of sit together, do you think?
I think that from my experience, I think you're right. The way teams function is radically changing, and we are moving away from this whole one boss. Yes, there has to be someone in charge, but you know, just because you have a title does not mean that you're a leader, and just because you don't have a title doesn't mean that you can't lead. And so I see it happen an awful lot in high-performing teams where actually, yes, we've got someone who is accountable for the results of this team, but ultimately within the team, we have lots of leaders for different things. So actually, you know, when we look at people's strengths within the team and we go, actually, you are the leader getting sales results. This person over here might be the leader for the knowledge and you know, looking up information and finding things out for the team and providing that information for the team. You might have another person over here who's the leader when it comes to data and results and looking at performance figures, and their role is to share those with the team. So whereas traditionally maybe we might have one person who we look to who does all this stuff for us, actually we might share that out across the team because there are other people who have those strengths and who are a better fit to lead in that situation and in that scenario. And again, I think that's another facet to compassionate leadership, is actually allowing people to thrive and allowing people to utilize their strengths and saying, actually, I don't need to be the boss, you know, the one with the title, the one who everyone looks up to me. You know, it's not about my ego. It's about all of us excelling and all of us doing really, really well. And so that means people playing to their strengths, you know, and I see that an awful lot in high performing teams these days. Again, it's quite a new concept and a lot of people are not comfortable with that, you know, relinquishing some of that power, if you like. But again, if you put the power with the person who is best placed to be able to do that, then you know the team is going to be better as a result of that.
There's another little golden moment from the voice of James Hudson there. Honestly, this this conversation, we've had so many little anecdotes that are just, yep, going to take that one. Yep, I love that one too. There was one final, I know you have to dash off because you have a group to attend to today, and more important stuff that you're up to. But I'm just
not at all, Neil. Kind of
on this one is this whole idea, just building on that last point there of relinquishing the responsibility is kind of how it might feel. Do you therefore feel then that the compassionate leader of the future almost like needs to kind of reinvent their whole mindset as being not that I boss and manage people, but am I then the holder of the vision? So I'm going to use that phrase, the holder of the vision. So basically, I am the custodian of the reason we come together as a group or as a team or as a business. And as long as I evangelize that and I do it with compassion, that is my new role. So my new role is not to tell you what to do. It's to hold the vision so that you always know the reasons why you're being asked to do what you do. And then you can go off and lead individually. You can kind of go and do all your specialisms as you described it. So does the boss of old, are they kind of reinventing themselves as holder of the vision? That's my question.
I like that.
I've waffled around that, but that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, I get your point completely, Neil. And I'll be honest with you, I am by no means an expert on compassionate leadership, but this has come, as I say, from my journey of 26 years in leadership and management, delivering leadership and management training, but also leading and managing, you know, some enormous teams on a global scale in some major operations. So I hadn't considered that before, but absolutely 100%. You know, we all know when we talk about leadership development training, you know, one of the key aspects of being a leader is about having a vision, sharing the vision, inspiring others with the vision. You know, we've all led those leadership development sessions. And I think you're absolutely right, Neil. I think one of the aspects of compassionate leadership is about holding that vision, about, you know, just bringing people back to the vision all of the time, and reminding them, this is what we're here to do. This is what the purpose is. I follow Simon Sinek an awful lot. I mean, I'm sure you've seen his work, Start With Why, and all that great stuff. And so I'm a massive believer in vision and purpose, and not being focused on profit, but being focused on purpose and how people want to be, to do great things. We've just got to allow them the space to do those great things. And so I absolutely would say compassionate leadership is about creating the space, creating the purpose, creating the vision, and then allowing people to do their best work. There's a quote that I use when I do change and transformation training. And for the life of me, I can't remember who it comes from or anything like that. This is how bad of a trainer I am, Neil. but I always have it on my screen, in my slide deck, and it always really opens up light bulb moments for people. And it's a simple quote that says something along the lines of, if you want to build a ship, don't split your workforce up and give them tasks and ask them to cut down trees. Instead, make them yearn for the open seas. And that is literally what we're doing with compassionate leadership. Is we're not sitting here telling people what to do. We're giving them the space to do their best work. And we're just winning their hearts and minds and getting them to yearn for a better way and showing them there is a better way and we can achieve this together. But not, you know, telling people, well, you've got to do this and you've got to do it this way and it's my way or the highway. It's, you're free to do this in the way that you see best to do it. I'm going to support you in that and help you to find the best way. And this is where we're all heading. And I think that's quite an accurate description of what I would call compassionate leadership. It's about creating that safe space for your team to thrive.
So we've had 30 minutes of compressed top tips from James Hudson. I don't know how, I think James is going for the record of how many great anecdotes and tips can I get into 30 minutes. I think you've won. I think you are top of the league table now. If we had a league table, we don't. We have lots of different styles of people on this podcast, but that has been absolutely amazing, James. I do want to let you go now, but not before actually two things. One is saying the way that James describes himself is actually very, very modest. James is an awesome trainer, awesome L&D professional, and no matter what he tells you, this is the man you want to come in and change stuff and transform your organization.
You're so too kind, Neil.
The second thing is, how do people actually then engage with you if they believe what I've just said and it is true, people? How do they get in contact with you?
So there are many different ways. One of the ways would be LinkedIn. So I am fairly active on LinkedIn. So feel free, anybody, to connect up with me on LinkedIn or to follow me on LinkedIn. You can also, so my change and transformation company is called Drive Development Solutions Limited. At the moment, we are currently redoing our website, so we don't currently have a web space. But if you want to contact me, we've got a info@drivedevelopment.co.uk email address that you can use for that. Or as I say, LinkedIn's probably a better place for that. The other thing, the way you can contact me is through the L&D Mastermind. So I run a community for learning and development professionals where we talk about all things L&D, change and transformation, leadership development, and all these great topics. And that website is www.ldmastermind.com, and it's the L&D Mastermind. We also have a really active Facebook group if people are on Facebook and they want to join us on there. We've got about 2,500, 3,000 L&D professionals on Facebook as well. So yeah, as you say, Neil, busy man, sometimes biting off more than I can chew, but there you go. I think we all do
Yeah,
that
it's
from
all
time to
good.
time.
We do. We do. I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much, James. And yeah, just letting us into your very, very hectic schedule. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. And yeah, hope to catch up again with you very, very soon.
No, my pleasure, Neil. Great to speak to you. Great to see you again. And I'll catch you again soon.